Hello, hello, everybody. How are you doing? How is Mr. Andrew Torres?
I am fantastic. How are you, Mr. Thomas Smith?
Doing okay. I think I'll start my story. I actually genuinely, this is a cry for help, but for real, for any tech geniuses out there, this one's funny. This is a cool one. I seem to have been personally banned from Google. And this is a big deal. Like it can
lawsuit.
Well, okay. So here's what happened.
Sidney Powell.
I actually think, and people let me know, I still think Andrew's mic might be a little hot, but let me know how you guys hear it. Spiky to me. Seems a little, peaky, but, anyway, I think Lindsay is to blame actually. I was going to download, here's what happened, everybody. Seriously, if there's any tech people listening for real, I actually need your help. Here's what happened. I go to download Lindsay's file that I need to edit by the end of today. And when I click to download it, it said like, link wrong or something, which is weird because it's like it's just an email, normal Google Share file thingy, right? I click, it says link wrong. And then after I try a couple times, I lose all Google. And I'm talking any Gmail account, any Google Drive, can't even go, oh, Jim, I need your help. I can't even go to google.com in the whole house. So the only reason I'm speaking to you right now, because every fucking thing in the world uses Google in some way. This is a major, it's not just like Google's out. Like I can't log into Patreon either. Cause like their interface involves Google in some way, even though and then Facebook and Twitter are still working. And so, what I had to do is I literally had to switch to my phone Wi-Fi. And so I'm using my phone and I hook that up. Actually, I got to stop. I think Dropbox is trying to sync right now, which would not be good on this internet. there, I just turned it off. And so I'm on my phone Wi-Fi right now. So if it's a little internet-y, whatever, that's why. Because once I, same computers, you know, switch to the phone Wi-Fi, then Google works. So it's like, I almost wonder if Google thought that I was attacking them by trying to download this file that Lindsay Osterman definitely set me up for, whatever that is. So this is, this is weird.
Nathan Bodnar says, I blame Nirvana, which Nathan and I are comrade spirits here.
There is only one GIF required for Andrew and Nirvana. And it is this. I tried restarting the router. When somebody says DNS issue, that doesn't say anything. So if you want to say like, here's a way to solve, you're just saying mystery words. Like, oh, it sounds like a downer's bad. Oh, okay. So then is it fixed now? Because you said that. I could call the internet company. So, the only
call GIF, the internet. You should complain to them.
That's what I'm saying. Google works. The only reason I'm here now is because I'm on my phone internet. So it works fine. Yeah, exactly. I have to turn my phone Wi-Fi off and use Verizon. I'm not on Verizon anymore, but whatever my phone service internet thing is. So. It's only happening today, right after this file thing happened.
Yeah.
So anyway,
it's only happening just in time for the live Q&A.
Yep.
Yeah. Jason Baker says this is like Boomer Q&A. So, you know.
Sure.
Well, I am.
I'm sure every millennial listening knows my issue and knows how to solve it. I'm sure. Yeah. I'm just a boomer. I'm just a fucking boomer. They're all like, yeah, it's a DNS. Hit the DNS button on your. Yeah, guys, I hear you. It doesn't help to say it's a DNS issue. I hear you all. Tell me what that means. That's like if I take my car in and the guy just says it's an engine issue. Like, okay, engine. What do I do?
Do you get this every time I take my car in and it's a major thing? Bring me over and they will. No. But
here's
what they'll do
right
is they'll point to a part. And they'll be like, see, this is the left decapitated flange. And I'll be like, uh-huh. And
like, I know.
Well, you know, it's got to be in counterclockwise.
They have to prove that they can do their job is the thing. They like, you see, it's got to be this thing. So that when you see the bill, then you're like, well, they had to fix the counter flange, whatever you said.
there is no chance that like they think that I know what the fuck their little counter flange is. But doesn't matter. Anyway. Shall we shall we do some non-Thomas internet-related questions?
Yeah, well, last thing. I don't think I'd be fixing it on my Mac because it seems to be independent of my computer because same computer, just different internet fixed it. So it seems to be within the router, I would imagine. But anyway, coincidentally,
Muon Decay says,
new router. This is adult life. Do you do this, Andrew? I bought a new spaceship router, like the best router. I was like, I need to get a new router. I haven't gotten a new one in a while. And it's just been sitting in the box for a month. I just haven't.
Yeah.
Do you do that? I'm going to buy that thing because it involves figuring it out in my brain. And I just never feel like doing it. Like, it's just always just go with what's already there. All right. Well, sorry for all that, but I think everyone who said it's a DNS issue means it's solved. So
Muon Decay 86's comment is okay. First, log into your GeoCities account.
Yeah. There we go. All right. Well, all that told, I still got us on here by 504. I feel like that was pretty good. I got all the links shared out. You know, we still got 69 people watching. That's the number that I wanted.
Nice.
Let me see who our first question is from patreon.com/. 69 is a little low. Do we pick a bad time?
69 is definitely low, but you know,
it's also the best number.
Yeah. Well,
oh, 71. what kind of sex act is a 71? I could imagine. Let's see. All right. Let's do our first.
See. First question. But you're gonna have to up your patronage to answer that one.
Just imagine. Teresa asks, "What traditionally bad smell do you like, e.g., things?" I'm retiring. Okay, this is big news, by the way. I don't even care about the question. I'm retiring while on top, so this is my last question. Unless I think of a real one later on, let the games begin to see who takes my place. Teresa, this is not acceptable. I don't know who.
No.
Teresa
must
by us.
Remain on top. That is just, that's the rules.
Yeah, I mean, did you clear this, Andrew? I did. This is the first I'm hearing about it.
Zero permission. So, it's a sanctions heavy week. And I think the sanctions against Teresa are, I think we have to not answer that question. So.
Oops, dang it. I was trying to highlight, I thought this was a funny message. And here's what I want to know. Were you wrong about Beyonce or wrong about Sam? Did you think Beyonce was how you pronounced Beyonce, maybe? Beyonce was
Seance with Beyonce. I love that.
Or did you think it was Seance? Either way, it's funny. What bad smell? I mean, gasoline has always been a favorite of mine.
I like that. Yeah, all of those, right? Most of the ones she listed, right? I like gasoline. Yeah. I like permanent marker. Oh, permanent marker smells great.
Here's my most controversial.
You know what does not smell good is dank weed in the Puzzle in a Thunderstorm house.
Here's my hot take that nobody hot smell take. I can't stand the smell of marijuana, and I actually kind of like the smell of cigarette smoke. Weirdest thing. I don't smoke, but like it just something. I don't want it all in my face, but like from a distance, a little bit of that cigarette smoke. I don't know why. It actually smells kind of good to me.
I love the smell of cigar smoke, and like once a year, I'll have a cigar. I need less frequently.
Same.
Than that,
but it's a big investment, that cigar. I don't know how people do it.
It is.
I smoke a cigar, and my whole night is ruined. You know, I wake up and my throat is all gross. Like,
it's a two-day commitment
all the time. Yeah. It's worse than drinking. Like, but here's the thing: smokers, and apologies, everybody. Smokers can sometimes smell bad, but which is weird because I like the cigarette smoke. But how does that work? I don't understand. All right, next question. We'll get to some law. Sakashite Fukusumi, Lord Spiritual, Temporal, Geospatial, and Socioeconomic. You've talked about how continental Europe's civil law system is generally non-adversarial compared with the common law system used in the United States and England. However, I don't think you've addressed the role of precedent in civil law. My understanding is that there's no such thing as binding precedent or stare decisis, i.e. courts can be persuaded by prior decisions but are never bound by them. I know that you prefer the system you are familiar with, but do you see any advantages of the continental European approach? Incidentally, on the subject of weird legal systems, did you know that a contract in Scotland does not require consideration? Unilateral promises can be legally enforceable. How interesting.
That is very interesting. So let's work backwards. I kind of like that system, right? This is just a quick reflex take, but like so many, like we have this system in the United States of, you know, for $1, it's called a peppercorn, right? And it is for $1 or for $10 and other good and valuable consideration contained herein, right? Like, it is distressingly easy for anybody with a lawyer to convert a contract without consideration into one with consideration. And consideration law has crept up in like some weird, weird ways. So I'll give an example of a consideration case that I think I agree with the outcome. I don't know. But it's still weird. And it had to do with non-competes in I Want to Say Illinois. Okay. And this case is about 10 years old at this point.
I want to say Illinois, but yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, I know you do. And basically what happened was Company A bought out Company B and then said, hey, we want all of the existing Company B employees to sign the Company A standard non-compete. Mm. And basically said, hey, you know, we'll fire you if you don't. We're otherwise, like, we're happy to have you on.
Negative consideration.
But, yeah, right. It is, you know, our policy that that our employees – sign this non-compete. You're not hooked up with it, so sign the non-compete. And as you might imagine, the one of the employees sued, and the state Supreme Court said, "Nope, that the resultant non-compete was void for lack of consideration." To me, not being fired seems like pretty good consideration to me. But, yeah.
Well, can't they make you just re-up your HR type documents from time to time, you know?
Again, that's it. There's so many ways. It's why I like the premise of the question, because there's so many ways around it, you know, with appropriate legal representation, that it feels like the consideration sort of comes in, you know, like water seeping through the cracks in kind of random places. So, so my gut instinct is I love the premise of the second half. Probably it would be terrible in practice. Who knows? It's just a quick reaction. Mm. On the role of precedence, again, you know, I think what I was most struck with was the last time we had Emma on, UK lawyer. Mm-hmm. And she said, we were talking Brexit, and she said, essentially that in the UK, they can do the equivalent of that thing that lawyers joke about here, which I again had a good joke, when people were posting links to some article that was like, you know, the California recall is unconstitutional, right? And I was like, well, that's a tough one because, you know, it's in the Constitution. Right? Now that could be, you could have a provision of a state constitution that violates the U.S. Constitution,
yeah.
But there's absolutely no – I mean, if you've looked at the status of voting rights in the U.S. Constitution, yeah. There's not a good basis for it. So, you know, yeah, like you chuckled, we get that. And you sometimes get, it's obviously even more funny with U.S. constitutional law. Like, you know, well, maybe the Supreme Court will, you know, declare the, you know, Second Amendment unconstitutional or whatever. And it's like, no, they're not going to do that.
Yeah.
British courts can do that, right? They can rule on the constitutionality of the Constitution itself. And
I thought they didn't
that just sort of blew my mind. Well, that I
yeah. So what's
in
the
other
equivalent
words, there's
law thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know because
some delightfully,
you know,
British, like, no right. longer something. Yeah. Probably. I don't know.
The
no.
Counselor of the Exchequer does hereby say, yeah. That's Q U E R.
Body of the first part.
So,
yeah.
So, I mean, you're right. Like, punching at stare decisis is like, you know, punching at one of my children. Like, I have a long stand. I have one child, so I've adopted stare decisis as a second. But, you know, it's a tough place to go after. But I certainly, like, the Trump years taught me that a lot of things that I thought were way more certain than you know, are way less certain than I thought they were 5 years ago when we started the show. So that's what I would say.
I need to answer a few dozen pending internet questions. Sorry. Okay. Don't have a modem. Tried restarting my router already. Didn't work. I'm not on Comcast. Let's see. I really think whatever Lindsay did with the file, like, that got me. She has it out for me, maybe. She's trying. I think, yep. I seriously do think that, like, Google identified me as somebody trying to attack them by having whatever happened with that file problem. That's kind of what, I don't know about that. What I said earlier is I might as well just replace my router now, cause I have the new one unopened. Like, this would be a good time. Once I'm done with this, I'm going to take that thing out of the box and just hook it up and do that. Okay. Sorry. All back right. to the non, whatever. No. Here's one. Non-internet questions. Here we go. Seth Crownover asks, if a non-lawyer were running for federal office, what resources would you direct them to if you wanted them to write good legislation? Well, it feels like they got AIDS. They got there plenty of non-lawyer. I mean, AOC, not a lawyer, I believe. Like, there, I feel like you can avail yourself of resources, you know, if you want to.
Yep. The critical role here for a non-lawyer is your legislative aide or legislative assistant. And that is kind of the person through whom all of the congressional stuff is funneled. And they are part of, you know, what Trumpian morons would call the deep state. But, like, it is not uncommon when it is uncommon to defeat an incumbent. It is not uncommon in that rare situation for the incoming candidate, if they are a freshman, if they have no experience, to hire the legislative aide from the person they beat, even if they've switched parties. You know, it almost always happens if you beat somebody in a primary. So there are a lot of resources. I would say, you know, the most important thing, I mean, the predicate of the question was running for federal office, right? Like, run on ideas, right? You know, you do not have to run on, I am the best drafter of legislation that there is.
I'm not sure the question was necessarily saying that.
Oh, okay. 'Cause
it said write good legislation. So that would assume they won, but maybe that's
fair enough.
Yep. No, I agree with you, though. That wouldn't be
lots of resources there.
That would be like you trying to run for office, and they'd be like, we don't care, big guy. We don't care that you can write good legislation.
No, that's right. No, that's exactly right. It's why I am not running for office.
Don't the people want to hear from a guy who really will dot his I's and cross his T's? No! Yeah.
No.
Even though it shouldn't be that way. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And well, Stormy Decisis is like, that's exactly what I would run on. I'd be like, yeah.
Yeah. I know. In a just world.
Make legislation great again.
In a just world, Andrew, I believe that should be an asset. But I feel like in our political system, they'd be like, are you building a wall or not? I don't care about any of this other details. Here's another. This is, I mean, it's got a lot of hearts, so I'm going to do it. But we seem to be on a theme lately. Kitsune Lane. Sorry, I don't know what that is. What other country's law are you most interested in? This question is interesting to me since I am a New Zealander who knows more about the nuances of American law, thanks to this podcast, than I do the nuances of the law in my own country. How interesting.
I will say off the top of my head, Australia. And that's because when we took a trip to Australia, like the things that we were allowed to do were things that just tort law would make impossible in the United States, right? So there's a zoo. There's an enclosure in which kangaroo just like
hang
run around. I mean, then they bounce too. No, like they will come up. You can buy the like handfuls of food and feed them out of your hand.
Are you allowed to like the punch one? Like there's like the like the, you know, that old circus thing that's like arm wrestle somebody. It's like that.
Yeah, the zookeeper who was doing our tour, you know, was like leaned over to the guy next to us who was feeding the kangaroo out of his hand. And is like, you know, when you get to the last couple of kernels, I would probably take your hand away. Right. And I asked him and he's like, yeah, you know, we get like two or three people get hurt, you know, any given day.
Two or three deaths a week. Yeah. Not
yeah.
A big
because
deal.
They're being stupid. And it was just like, you
and the law there is like laws. Were you being stupid? Yes. Okay, we're not, then fine. They don't care. It's not like here where you're like pay them millions of dollars.
Is that what it is? Your tort laws must be amazing in Australia, is all I have to say.
Here's my answer to this question, Andrew, is we find whatever country we want to travel to, and we pretend we're interested in the law there, and then it's a business travel expense. How about that? Whatever the best country is. Italy. We're interested in
Australia. Real good one there. Yeah. Italy would be good. France, you know, we could. You've been to Bordeaux. I have not.
I'll go right back. Yeah, I'm interested. I'm interested in wine law. They have a lot of laws about the wine there because they want.
Indeed.
You know, they care about it. They want it all to be consistent. So sounds like a business expense, Andrew. Better go.
All right. Time to do it.
All right. Help. I'm stuck in a podcast factory asks, how hard is it for a state trial court to apply the laws of another state? I would imagine that a trial court in State A would not be as familiar with how State B's laws have been interpreted by State B's appellate courts. Bonus point, does the answer change when one of the states is Louisiana? Oh, yeah, that's a reference to a thingy. Yeah, I've wondered this when we've had topics, T3B questions about this. We've learned that you can be in State A and apply State F's laws randomly. So how does that work?
Yep. And the answer is not hard at all. In so far as it is not considered a strong argument for distinguishing a decision to say that that decision was a federal court applying a different state court's law, right? So let me try and break that down. Suppose you have a federal court in Virginia applying Maryland law, right? And then that goes up to the Fourth Circuit and they affirm. And then I'm later trying a case in Maryland and I have that Fourth Circuit opinion and it says the opposite of what I want it to say. So now I have to distinguish that Fourth Circuit opinion. We've talked about there are good ways to distinguish a case. There are bad ways. That Fourth Circuit was just affirming a Virginia court applying Maryland law. It's an argument. I've seen it made. But it's not a great argument, right? It sometimes state Supreme Courts, this is where you'll see it the most, a state Supreme Court will sometimes look at that and go, oh yeah, no, that's not where we would want to go, at all. And will distinguish a federal court attempting to apply their law on that basis. We also haven't talked about this as sort of tangential, but a procedure that is available in federal courts and also in state intermediate appellate courts is the certified question, right? And that is if you have a state applying another state's law or court applying another state's law and it seems like a question of first impression. You could ask that state Supreme Court, hey, will you certify this question and answer this for us so that we don't get it wrong? And sometimes state Supreme Courts will do that. Other times they'll just be like, no, give it your best shot. We're cool. So
we don't need any more work. We're a court just like that. We're both courts here. Court to court.
We're all courts here.
Oh, man. Hey, I do want to thank, all jokes aside, I know I made fun of people for just saying DNS issue, but all jokes aside, thank you so much for everybody trying to help with that. And I think my plan right now is after we're done, I will just swap out that new router that this is Google telling me, like, put in the new router you've had for a month in an unopened box. So I'm going to do that. We got another one from Help, I'm Stuck in a Podcast Factory, and it has a lot of hearts, so I think we got to get to it. I like this.
Ooh.
Help, I'm Stuck in a Podcast Factory asks, is there any process by which SCOTUS can amend an opinion? Say that all of the justices who signed on to the majority opinion realized that they overlooked a place where they should have called out an exception. Can they take a mulligan, or would they have to wait for another case on the same subject to make its way back to them? That's really fascinating. I never thought about that.
Yeah, they absolutely can finalize an opinion, and that finalization can include hilariously, sometimes it is because you'll often see like how the majority opinion will say, you know, my esteemed colleagues in the minority claim X, but Y. And then in the dissent, it will say the majority says this, but, you know, or the, like, so sometimes they'll go through and they'll even like add another footnote, you know, to to kind of go back and stick it to the dissent. But yeah. So this is why when you look at Supreme Court citations historically, right, it would take a couple of years before you would get a U.S. reporter cite because what you get the day of is called a slip copy.
Oh, yeah.
And it's recognized that, you know, your slip copy might change before you finalize the opinion. But now the Supreme Court's not going to let some stupid technicality stop them from fixing their opinion. So, yeah.
I just feel like it'd be an arrogance thing. Like, they'd never admit they were wrong about it. Never admit they made a mistake in a previous opinion. I don't know.
Well, that... That could be the case.
You know, the point of the question said, like, oh, if everybody who signed on to the opinion, but that wouldn't matter, right? Wouldn't it be any sitting Supreme Court could just amend any Supreme Court opinion? Or would you actually need the same justices?
I have never seen, and God help you if you have just suggested something to, you know, Neil Gorsuch, but I believe the internal rules, you know, require you when you are amending an opinion for it to be, you know, the same court in the same session, right? You know, you couldn't go back and just say like, oh yeah, the you know, we meant to say, we just found this secret document that, you know, said that you know, we meant to come out the other way in Obergefell or something like that.
So, I absolutely didn't just share this as a misclick on this.
There you go.
Dormy, how dare you? Oh, no. Sorry. How much legally do I have to protest as I share that, Andrew? It's okay. Speaking of Stormy, was the process of turning over from Stormy Decisis, of course, was the process of turning over documents different in the era before copy machines? Seems like demanding records would be a very different ballgame if me having a file means you not having it. I feel like this could be an opportunity for some delightful boomer law, old-timey stuff.
How the fuck old do you people think I am?
I don't know, man. You have some stories. Well, also, it's not just that. It's that the profession is usually, like, behind a bit, you know, so you're still – maybe you were younger, but you're still using that, like, 1960s technology when you got your job at your law firm, you know? I don't know.
But I actually do know the answer to this because it is present in
– See? Was I wrong, Andrew?
It is present in the language in the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, and that is what you used to do was make the documents available for inspection. And so the parties would retain control of their own documents. You would show up as the lawyer. You would be able to, like, have access, take notes. I don't know, set up one of those Bugs Bunny camera things where you put the I can only speculate about stupid technology. People are talking about mimeographs and, like, you know, mimeograph, I think, is that, like,
check your
blue
boobs
sheet that cancer, used to come in. That nice. Did you never had
like the carbon copy type thing?
Yeah, sort of, but they were called dittos. Back when I was in elementary school, it was like a cheaper form of copying.
Yeah.
But in any event, in an era before any ability to copy whatsoever, you would inspect the documents and take notes. That's it.
Here's man, Stormy on a roll, 21 hearts.
All right.
High heart mark. No, this is a good one. Stormy Decisis. Texas has opened a website for people to snitch on anyone getting an abortion. My God, what? Do we just live in the fucking Handmaid's Tale, I guess?
Yeah, it's the Handmaid's Tale.
Has responded by flooding that site with submissions consisting of the entire script of B-movie, K-pop ballads, cartoon Shrek porn, and the like. Is this legal?
What
P.S.
Is the,
I don't
what
care.
What is the rule?
Awesome.
Is that rule 23 that they're part of it?
Yeah. If people it's illegal.
People have sent me Transformers porn, so please do not do that.
Please do that.
Please do not do that.
You don't Thomas want Transformers
at,
porn. Okay.
Thomas@seriouspod.com.
Do you not want Transformers porn in the same way that you didn't know the answer to that last question about pre-copy machine era, Andrew? If it's illegal, it seems like it can't be prosecuted if the submissions come from out of state, right? Okay, tell us everything we need to know about.
All right. Well, I can answer that last part of the question, which is if you commit a crime in another state, that state just gets an extradition warrant for your arrest, which they turn over to the state that you're in, who will then turn you over to that.
Would California be like, not going to do it? Wouldn't be prudent. We're not going to turn you into Texas for violating an abortion fucking Handmaid's Tale law.
It would be interesting in a law this bad, right? It would be a constitutional crisis because states are required to have comity to each other's laws under the full faith and credit clause. But California has pretty strong interest because you don't want people committing murders in California and then being like, we're fleeing to Texas because Texas now won't extradite back to California because they're retaliating for the whole abortion thing. So it could set us up down a really slippery slope. But that being said, if I were Attorney General of California, I would think long and hard about signing that extradition warrant because this law is – again, assuming that it is represented – that it is as represented. I don't know. I didn't know about the website. I don't know about the law. Usually when you are participating in a judicial proceeding – you have qualified immunity for the stuff you do in connection with that proceeding. Remember, that's part of why what's-his-face's defamation lawsuit was so unconscionably stupid, where it was like, Dominion said these bad things again about me in their lawsuit. And it's like, yeah, they can do that.
But there's got to be some – I mean, I assume you're not allowed to just falsely report someone for a crime over and over and over. So there must be some limits
And this was not listed in that. Like certain things are per se criminal offenses, right? Like possession of child pornography, right? So it would not be a defense that, I submitted this child pornography in, because I thought it was relevant to this, online submission portal. I know that was not in Stormy's initial setup, but there's some things that you would not get around regardless. The cartoon Shrek stuff. I don't know. I'm not a cartoon Shrek.
I've seen some
lawyer,
things that might be illegal. That's so bad. It might be illegal. Whew.
I wouldn't want to weigh in on that.
The really bad one that has gotten shared before is Jar Jar Binks.
Oof. If anyone here knows what I'm talking about.
Oh, man. Okay. Wow. Those were where all the hearts were. Let's see. Here's the next one that has some hearts. Andrew Nielsen asks, this might cut into an upcoming episode, but reading Judge Parker's decision on the Kraken sanctions, she referred them to the jurisdictions in which they barred. Oh, yeah, we talked about that. How do the hearings on these attorney grievances filings work? How much weight is the judge's recommendation given? Judge Parker pretty roundly rejects the "but it was my first day" arguments. Is the hearing in their home jurisdictions a better place to make those arguments? Yeah, interesting.
Great question. We actually spent the hour doing a live cleanup on aisle 45. We had Glenn Kirshner with us and went through the entire sanctions hearing. So listen to today's still Tuesday. I can never remember what day it is. Listen to tomorrow's cleanup when it comes out. I think I answered this question in the Q&A. All right, so I'm going to answer it here in our Q&A because you guys deserve it.
I didn't hear it. Yeah, do it.
Yeah, that's right. So here's the answer. This is how almost every state – put an asterisk. I can't claim definitively, but I think this is how every state does their attorney grievance process. And I know because I've been asked to be a part of this process before. So what happens is the Attorney Grievance Commission, or its equivalent in any particular state, is constituted of – practicing attorneys that are nominated by the federal bench, right? So lawyers of some renown in the state who are recognized by the judiciary and then selected to be a part of that commission. So they're your prominent lawyers. And that's really crucial. The rest of it, you know, is all going to be procedural. But that's really crucial to understanding this, because every lawyer I know who is not fucking Sidney Powell is embarrassed at saying, yeah.
Do you mean fucking I'm Sidney Powell or fucking Sidney no, Powell?
Yeah.
Or both.
Both.
There's definitely a vibe between her and the guy that put his she's the fucking guy that was a trial lawyer, if she needs a trial lawyer.
Oh, Lynn Wood.
Yeah, there's a vibe. Oh. There's a vibe there.
Sorry, now I am picturing Sidney
Powell. That's worse than the Shrek porn, yeah.
Having sex with Lynn Wood, and I take it all back.
Absolutely
send
worse.
Send me your Transformers porn now.
If you had to choose, you want the Transformers porn.
Oh, yeah, please. No, but seriously, right? So even conservative lawyers are appalled at the behavior of Lynn Wood and Sidney Powell. And so I do not think that any of this is going to get a sympathetic hearing before those AGCs. And they make the factual findings to which the court then defers. And typically you have a right to appeal to your state Supreme Court, right? So that's part of the due process. It is the highest lawyers, it's the highest court in the state reviewing a commission comprised of, you know, what should theoretically be the most respected lawyers in the state. This is going to go very, very badly for all of these idiots in their home jurisdictions. And I'm super happy about that.
This is one of the funniest comments. There's a lot to this one. I know I already put it up, Andrew, but did you get a chance to see this? Yeah. I prepped all my best furry material for nothing. The Texas website is not working. There's a lot there. I like how you, so it's all your best furry. So you have a wider collection of furry material and you're like, no, I gotta cultivate the best of it. You know,
I can't just send it all over. The A material, right?
Yeah. Oops, I misclicked. Yeah, I gotta send my A game. You already have it available. There's so much there. I love it. Okay. Here's one that's got some hearts. People want to know the answer. By the way, thanks so much for asking the questions, for hearting the ones that you want to see, patrons. We love you so much. And these Q&As work because of your great questions and your participating and hearting other people's questions. It's super cool. Okay. Annie asks, valuable Disney copyrights are about to expire, and I think we all expect them to push for another extension. What, if anything, can an average person do to fight back against this aggressive expansion of corporate interests into the public sphere?
So I love the question. I think the answer is nothing. It is interesting to me that, you know, sort of all of the influence that the Disney Corporation wields, and it is incredible and massive, I don't know that its copyrights are, you know, at the forefront. Like, yes, Disney is sort of notorious about going after, you know, scrapbookers and hobbyists and crafters who stick a Mickey Mouse on stuff. But I have to say, like, if you click over to – and you see less of this, but, like, if you click over to, like, an Etsy or a hobbyist site, there are an awful lot of people who are – in my view, it's kind of a hard line to draw, right? So let me give you an example of an area that I care about: Transformers. There is a vibrant third party community that, especially
makes
now
porn.
especially now with 3D printers, will make custom. Ooh. Transformers,
toys, sex toys. Yeah,
and they will make Transformers of toys that Hasbro doesn't make toys of, right? And they're incredibly interesting. And in my view, like, while it could theoretically violate Hasbro's copyright. Hasbro has actually taken kind of a pro third party stance.
Really?
Official Transformers convention, they'll have a third party panel. They don't go after those people. On the other hand, it seems to me like if you sell a messenger bag that says Optimus Prime on it and the Transformers logo, right? Like, you didn't do it, right? Like, you don't own that. Hasbro owns that. And I get it that they're a billion-dollar corporation, but, like, they're the ones that came up with Optimus Prime. Like, I would be mad if somebody were selling Opening Arguments merchandise, right? Like,
yeah, which they have.
You're not the show.
Yeah.
Like,
no, I know. That's interesting, but it's cool that they allow that. It must be an interesting kind of calculation of cost benefit. You know, maybe it's toys that are too hard for them to want to make at massive scale, so it wouldn't be money for them, so it's worth it to just get sort of the advertising of it and the, you know, the goodwill kind of thing. That's interesting.
Yeah,
but not true for OA merch. Don't make your own OA merch. You don't have the permission.
Yeah. and again, you know,
I hereby give you permission to make a giant OA transformer, but it has to be huge and it has to transform. And then you can utilize – Andrew, do you second this? If they make it like a huge
Optimus Prime. If it turns into – yeah, right.
From the OA logo into a Transformer. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And so all I would say is, like, I get and I see a lot of those complaints. You know, if you're not making money off of someone else's property, like, you will not be the subject of an evil Disney lawsuit. So –
Yeah. Gosh, you know what? Oh, here's a good one first. Never mind. Here we go. AB says, I've often heard lawyers say and write something like, I'm a lawyer, but I am not your lawyer, or this is not legal advice. I know this is intended to make that fact very clear, but are there cases where a lawyer hasn't made that clear and been successfully sued as a result? Well, is it about being sued or is it about being disbarred or whatever?
Or yeah, could it be both? It certainly could be both. I mean, let's talk about all of that. One of the things that was the linchpin to the Michigan Kraken sanctions ruling, right? You might recall Lynn Wood was like, I didn't sign any of these pleadings. Nobody paid me any money. I'm not here. There are no client engagement letters. And Judge Parker was like, the Michigan rules of professional conduct say anybody who offers legal services in the state of Michigan is subject to our discipline, right? And appropriately so. And here's the quote of you saying, you told Sidney Powell, I'm a quote unquote trial lawyer, which, you know, any lawyer ever refers to himself as a quote unquote trial lawyer, you can run. So I think the primary purpose is neither to avoid litigation nor to avoid sanctions, but rather to make it clear that you do not fall under that application because you are not offering legal services in the jurisdiction in which the person is reading it. And then there are other model rules of professional conduct that, you know, sort of require you, like, I get if you call my office and want to engage me as a lawyer, you're allowed to ask me some hypothetical questions, or you're allowed to ask me real questions, and I can give you sort of what is the start of advice, and the attorney-client privilege protects that conversation, and rightly so, because if it didn't, then people wouldn't be able to effectively go hunt for lawyers, right? Mm-hmm. So, again, it's just in a lawyer's best interest to clarify, you know, when do those things apply and when do they not? So,
gotcha. When you know it, it's Stormy with another 21 hard questions. So, I mean, supply and demand, wow. Capitalism, I don't know, whatever. We got to go with the demand here. If Andrew were in charge of Sidney Powell's mandatory 12-hour remedial curriculum, what would be included? Bear in mind that the machine that holds your eyes open from Clockwork Orange is real but difficult to obtain. Well, short of that.
Yeah, it would be – so the 12 hours are 6 hours of the rules of pleading and 6 hours of election law. And if I were in charge of pleading, I would sneak as much ethics into that as possible.
Well, I was going to say, let's clarify. Is your goal to actually try to turn Sidney Powell, someone who cannot be changed, into a good lawyer? Or is your goal to inflict the most punishment, Andrew?
Yes.
The most, I want to hear the most punishment. What would that
and
be?
Let's be right. And let's be clear. The goal of Judge Parker in imposing those requirements was to inflict the most punishment, right? Like, the reason – I don't know if I made this explicit on the show – the order requires them to report back in within 6 months and tell the court which classes they've taken and why.
Show them your report card.
Yeah, show them your report card.
Report card.
And the reason for that is very, very clear. Sidney Powell could just walk away and say, eh, fuck the law. I'm not going to be a lawyer anymore. I'll just continue to rake in good money off of all of this grift, right? And I have a promising career going on OAN News until I decompose. Here's the thing. If Sidney Powell does not take those 12 hours of remedial courses, she will be in contempt of court, which has continuing jurisdiction over the sanctions order. So,
I didn't know that.
You know, we read the footnote, right? The footnote 85 that says the court is troubled by the fact that, you know, she's fundraising off of her terrible lawyering, and I would like, you know, this is Judge Parker saying, and I would like whoever takes that, you know, whoever, whichever disciplinary bodies to take that into account. So the judge is well aware of what Sidney Powell's game plan is. And so this is a way of saying, like, yeah, I don't care. You can say I'm not going to be a lawyer anymore, but God damn it, you're going to take these 12 hours.
Classes. That's incredible. Absolutely. I love that.
Yeah.
So, what a great judge.
She probably won't, and I cannot wait. We will be – I have a reminder on my calendar to check in in late January of 2022 and see if Sidney Powell's filed that report.
I mean, that's got to be my new favorite judge. What's her name again? I forget. I'm blanking.
It's Linda Parker.
Linda Parker. Yeah. Judge Parker, if you're listening – are you seeing anyone? No, it's okay. She's the new best judge. Are you? Let she get Biden. Get her on the Supreme Court or the federal. Or is she the? What is she? No, she's a state.
She
level.
Is. She's a U.S. District Court judge. No.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. So get her on the Supreme Court.
Yeah, you want to elevate her to the Sixth Circuit?
Yes,
absolutely. Do that yesterday.
Yeah, she's fantastic. Okay, Zachary Morris has a question here. I think in a. After this one, I think I should do the reverse, you know, refresh the page, go reverse.
Yeah.
But last one here from going this direction. What is something you have been witness to at the courthouse outside of the actual courtroom that struck you as odd enough to remember, or one of your better, I remember this odd thing at the government building I witnessed? Well, that's a specific question. I don't know. I'm amazed I got 10 hearts. Do you have a good story?
I have told this before, so Thomas will know this, but I don't think I've told it in a long time. And this was, I was in Beaumont, Texas for what was going to be the start of a trial on an insurance coverage case. And I was lead counsel for Lloyd's of London. Lloyd's had the largest share of the liabilities. And so I was lead counsel there with, I'm going to conservatively say, 30 other insurer defendants, many of whom had 2 to 3 lawyers. So 100 defense counsel lawyers and like 4 plaintiffs lawyers, right? And we're all in this tiny little courthouse in Beaumont, Texas, kind of mingling on the first floor. And incidentally, I'm in my mid-30s, early 30s at this point, and everybody else is 100, right? Like it is. I'm the youngest person there by 2 generations, right? Now, that's the scene Monday morning. Sunday night is when you have to get into Beaumont because there are no direct flights into Beaumont. You fly into Houston, you rent a car, you drive to Beaumont, and you stay at the Motel 6 because there's only like 1 hotel in Beaumont, right? And so I do that. I'm there. I get into the Motel 6. I turn on the TV. It's got one of those like analog dials. There are like 4 channels, right? And 3 of them are blurry. But one of them is TBS, which is showing The Waterboy, right? The classic Adam Sandler football movie, The Waterboy.
Dude, is that your phone that keeps vibrating or is that something else?
It is my phone that keeps vibrating. Oh. I'll shut it off. Yep.
Yeah, the Waterboy was already like bad in terms of Adam Sandler. That was like when people were like, all right, we're done. This isn't that good. Or am I wrong? Did people actually like that? I remember being a pretty shitty Adam Sandler movie. But anyway.
In any event, I don't think it's at the like Little Nicky level of bad Adam Sandler.
Oh, really?
Movies.
Okay. Well, it's the beginning of the end.
It's the beginning of the end. It is like his sports movies, in my view, are okay. But sure. In any event, I put on the Waterboy. And while I'm unpacking and, you know, prepping for the hearing tomorrow. Now, let's go back to the hearing. Everybody, it is the most surreal spectacle ever of 80 different 70-year-old men going up to each other going, Vicky Valancourt, let me touch your boobies, right? Oh, and just, God. Like, repeating lines from The Waterboy to each other because we were all in that same spot. We were all at the same hotel. There was all only one channel on, and everybody put on The Waterboy. The night
that
before.
Is the weirdest story I've ever heard in my life.
hearing 100 insurance coverage lawyers misquote often, but quote The Waterboy at one another before at 8 a.m. is the weirdest thing that's ever happened in a courthouse to me.
Here's one. Let's remember this person as a patron, so I think we should try not to try not to jump down their throat too much. Donnie says, what do you think are the chances you guys could stop using the word libertarian as a comedic synonym for radical right winger and make it easy for me to recommend my favorite and most listened to podcast to all my favorite people? I'm sure from your perspective, it feels like a rare throwaway joke, but every time you make it, it sticks in my craw and just seems so incongruous with the rest of your rational, well thought out takes. What do you make of that? What do you mean?
Hey, Donnie, we love you. Thanks for being a patron. Have you not listened to our episode on libertarianism is bad and you should feel bad?
Got a recommendation for you. Check out that one.
We do not. And by the way, like to be clear. So answer the question is, I will give up the practice of law before I will give up making fun of libertarians. Number two, we very clearly do not use it as a throwaway joke that as a synonym for Trump supporting, you know, moron, right? Like we use, you know, Trump supporting moron for that. Mm. It is much more. And here's how dangerous it is, right? Like libertarianism has, I think it occupies the same role that like, and I don't want to give a plug to Sam Harris giving what he is now, but like, you know, the way Sam Harris talks about moderate religion in The End of Faith, right? It's like, yeah, I get it that like, you know, your grandmother's occasional trip to, you know, the Episcopalian church probably doesn't do anything, but like, that's what gives cover for right-wing churches that, you know, have set the American agenda. Libertarians who vote on I'm going to vote for whichever candidate says they hate taxes the most I'm going to vote Republican and I don't care that I am voting for racists and monsters. And by the way, challenge still stands, Donnie. You want to write us an email and tell me how you solve Nozick's dilemma to Lockean materialism.
Well, I wonder if it sounds like you got a good one. Best friends or something, or because they listen to the
show. Some of my friends are libertarians,
I guess,
too.
That's what I'd say is why are all your favorite people libertarians? That would be, I'm not saying you can't be friends with libertarians. I'm just saying why it's literally all my favorite people. Like libertarianism is just the most selfish ideology out there. I mean, I can't think of a more selfish one. And speaking as someone who, when I was in my early 20s, was like, oh, that makes sense. 'Cause I'm a white dude, you know, like, yeah, it makes sense to be like, everybody stop requiring anything of me. Nobody should require anything of anybody. Leave everybody alone because we're all fine, right? Right, everybody? We're all fine. Everybody looks like me. And then, you know, you grow up and you realize what's happening in the world and it's just a selfish ideology. And I resent the fact that, like, people can, like you say, it's almost an excuse to vote for horrible people and pretend you're not doing a racism because you're just a libertarian who wants small government, you know? But I resent that about it. And also, I guess the other thing I was going to say is I agree with you that we don't use that as an insult for Trumpers. They're very different categories in my mind. I don't think that's
accurate. Yeah. I want to say two things to that really quickly. First, JJ McWilliams plugs that they should listen to the Bear episode on Citation Needed. What you should do is you should read A Libertarian Walks Into a Bear. It's a it's a relatively short book. It's really, really good. You know, you're a high level enough patron, I'll send you my copy. It's a great kind of story on the ground. Secondly, I just want to emphasize Thomas's point. This is where I come down on the like confrontation slash ridicule slash, you know, conciliation sort of side of the spectrum, right? And that is people who are already largely inclined to agree with a lot of what I have to say are the folks that I'm most likely to want to satirize, to target, to insult, because I want to jar you a little bit, right? Like, if you're a libertarian listening to the show, I want you to think about that. I want you to go back and say, like, okay, how do I square believing X, Y, Z, and A with also understanding and agreeing with everything I hear on Opening Arguments? And if that means I lose you as a listener, well, I mean, that's I don't know how to persuade a mass audience. I know how to persuade people kind of one-on-one. But I tend to think if you like what you're hearing on the show, I want to encourage that cognitive dissonance. And so that's why I would take that tactic.
Sure. Here's I'm just kind of browsing the questions now, looking for ones I like. I like this one. I think you'll appreciate this. Steve S. asks, a dear friend of mine is a personal injury attorney, and when we go out to a baseball game, the stories he tells make me admire the work he does very much. Why is there so much hate from the rest of the legal community for the personal injury space? Is it all about money, but then again, we don't really have any other methods of making injured people whole.
Yeah. One of my best friends, in fact, friend of the show, Chris Christofko, quit his job, was a lawyer, then worked as a casino manager for a while. He's on some of our very early episodes. Then got the itch to go back to practicing law again, and now works at a personal injury firm in Pennsylvania. So I can honestly say some of my best friends are PI attorneys, and you are 100% correct. It's why I try to avoid, occasionally you can't help it. I try to avoid even, you know, the vaguest of like the ambulance chaser jokes, because, demonizing personal injury attorneys, right, of the sort, even on the mild level of like, you know, that's what Lionel Hutz does on The Simpsons, and he's got the, you know, drawer full of neck collars to, you know, put on you the minute Bart Simpson comes into the room. All of that is part of and in service of the right wing's effort to distract you from what the problem is with the American civil judicial system. And I've said this before, I'll say it again. The problem with the American judicial system civilly is that everything flows through cases by and between mega corporations.
Yeah.
And
teams of Waterboy watching attorneys.
Yeah,
quoting Waterboy at each other, clogging up our courts.
it is the reason when we look at those cases, right, and you see 970 docket entries and a case that's been pending for 8 years and will never go to trial, right? Like that's why our courts are clogged. It is not, you know, slip and fall or traffic accidents or things like that. And I'm really proud of our McDonald's coffee coverage. I'm really proud of what personal injury attorneys do as a general profession. Now, let's talk about some legitimate criticism. Number one, many PI firms are set up as churn factories, right? You come in, they're trying to get as many clients through the door and out the door and settled as possible. You might take a third of a settlement for a case that you had for 2 hours. I've said that, you know, sort of the most extreme abuses of this really came in asbestos litigation, where, you know, you had asbestosis cases where plaintiff's attorneys were bringing not class actions, but matrixed like 1,000 plaintiffs, all with asymptomatic asbestosis. You'd get $500 per plaintiff, so $500,000 settlement, and, you know, they would keep almost 200,000 of that settlement, and then everybody else would get, you know, a couple $100. That doesn't quite seem like making injured people whole to me, right? Like it. So there are certainly ways that the contingent fee system and kind of the churn of practice feels like it doesn't live up to those ideals.
Yeah, this is my fault.
In my view,
I meant to say this was a lightning round, but Andrew's
oh,
on.
Sorry. Okay.
Act yep. four right. of his. No, it was a great answer. I do love it. My mistake
Done.
In not saying
lightning round.
We are almost, I'm just about, kids are home, I'm out of time, but we're going to have one more question that I think is fun. Oh. And
okay.
look at this. We didn't plan this. I'm pretty New Hampshire, but I'm not libertarian walks into a bear New Hampshire. What are the odds? Asks.
Great name.
A YouTuber I follow recently asked his audience jokingly what they would want done at their funerals. One of the answers someone gave was to choose who inherited their belongings based on a game of chance, which seemed like a plausible non-joke answer to me. Assuming I am in a state where some kind of gambling is legal, is this possible? Does it depend on the exact game? That's interesting.
I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah. It reminds me of like, I'll stall you a little bit for time, but I know in competitive things, like either when I played competitive Magic the Gathering tournaments or like, I think chess tournaments, there's rules about like when you can and can't, you can concede to somebody, you can draw, but if you like decide to flip a coin to determine the match, you're like banned for Magic for life. Like somehow that distinction of like, you know, yes, you can draw or you can concede the match to somebody, but if you flip a coin on it, you're doing something like totally untoward, is really interesting. I guess it makes sense. Is it a similar thing here? Do you have any idea of whether it's like, well, it's in my will, so it says flip a coin, or if that's something they would not let you do somehow?
So, and again, with the huge caveat that this is not my area, right? Mm-hmm. Trust and estates is, and they have their own arcane rules. They have a lot of 13th century Saxony stuff still left over. You're basically trying to balance two things. Number one, contractually implementing the will of the decedent, right? And you have a lot of
coin.
And by will, I didn't mean capital W will. I mean the intent of the decedent, right? And there are lots of things you can do, right? Like you can say, you know, hey, I want to give my house over to my nephew so long as he always uses it as a bird sanctuary. Yeah. But if he ever gets rid of my prize pigeon, then I want it to go to my sister-in-law who can run it as a convent. Yeah. Like, seriously, you can
Isn't
do
there
all
always
of that.
That ancient, that old trope of the stay in the haunted house thing, that's a game of chance, right? I mean, assuming you believe in ghosts, that's like, hey, if you survive this, you know, ghost game, then you get the mansion, right?
So, but I don't know if the haunted house thing is possible. Yeah, right. And then there's the flip side, right, which is and this is where litigation happens, to my understanding, again, with the big asterisk on it, is that you also have there's certain presumptions when somebody dies intestate, when they die without a will. There are certain presumptions as to how that estate gets divided up. Like usually it's per stirpes, right? And so, so if there are folks who would otherwise be in line for a very large inheritance, who in the will get a very small inheritance, their job is to file a lawsuit to throw out that will and to say the will was not, you know, properly made. It does not accurately reflect the intent of the decedent. And typically the arguments for that are, you know, a will that was signed a week before someone died. And you might say they were not in their right mind. Right. And so you would use, so the crazier something is, the easier that would be in my mind to use as evidence to say, yeah, look, grandpa had a will for 40 years that said, I want my estate to be divided up to my family. A week before he died of, you know, he had late Alzheimer's, right? Like, and then a week before he died, he writes a will that says, I want you to spin the dial from the game of life and figure right. Like there would be a real good argument.
So
that's
the lesson
like, okay,
you're saying, the lesson is get your gambly wills in writing sooner rather
early.
Than later.
Yeah, early and again, don't take legal advice from a podcast, especially a podcast from where the lawyer is definitely
mine's gonna,
not.
What about not a game of chance, a game of skill? Is that a different story? What about crokinole game to determine my inheritance among my children? Am I allowed to do that?
I would say same principle would apply.
In accordance with the tournament crokinole rules, crokinole federation, whatever. All right, I'm over time.
I am definitely buying crokinole for my brother-in-law for Christmas.
Dude, so. I bought, did you see my post about the board that came with the religious shit?
Yep.
Oh, I threw it away, but I at least got that picture. That is so funny. What are the odds that I would learn about crokinole from the most atheist-y of gatherings? Literally a atheist company retreat, pretty much. Right. And then I order a crokinole board and get like, you know, the whatever that freaking newspaper is full of Bible verses. How funny is that? Well, Chris L, you missed our oops, wrong one. It keeps moving when I try to do that. I love crokinole. I got hooked after our trip, and I'm gonna try to do it professionally. No, I don't. I bought the board anyway. Thanks so much, everybody. We love you so much. We love our patrons. This was a lot of fun. Thanks for joining, and we'll see you next time.
Bye bye.